Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into another week. You know, Don Mohler, I was going to wear my spring sort of Easter-y feeling, but I'll save all that for opening day when we get to some baseball stuff. But you and I have come together and decided with all this interviewing we're doing of other people, and we had Johnny O a couple of weeks ago. We've had various political candidates, candidates for controller. We've had various leaders on that you and I don't like to just sit and talk about stuff. I always say that Roderick's had a gripe session. We have decided to call this the Recon. So welcome to the weekly Recon, Don. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, and I always thank our friend Fronda Cohen for coming up with the Recon. It really is what it is, right? It's a look back. It's a look where we are. It's a look forward.
What did that mean in the county executive's office when you were working for Jim Smith? If you had to do Recon on something, what would you do?
Well, my style always was, and Fronda was part of that team. Anytime we had to come up with any kind of communication strategy or plan, I always believed the more the merrier. So I liked to fill a room with some of our key advisors, basically whiteboard ideas, the idea, you know, that everybody's familiar with, that there are no bad ideas. Let's talk about where we want to go, shoot them down, and, you know, through the strength of many, we'll come up with a good idea. But what I'm struck by, Nestor, we've only been doing this for a couple of weeks now. It really is dizzying, everything that's going on, right? I mean, you know, just recently, I don't know about you. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you're not a royal family watcher. But I am fascinated by the cultural fascination of people across the world.
I've never gotten
with the royal family.
Let me guess. Your wife cares about it.
Yeah. She's
so does mine. I don't know whether it's Diana and, you know, that happening, that tragedy happening, but I've been to London a couple times. I've never really been to Buckingham. I mean, I don't really care about any of that. Downton Abbey and like what, you know, I kind of find it appalling, honestly, like, you know, royalty and your blood and my blood. And then lo and behold, we find out in 2021, it's because she's black. Like, I woke up to that on Monday morning. Like, I never even like thought about what the issue was. And then I saw it on Twitter Monday. So it must be true.
What a shocker, right? That the royals were concerned about race in 2021. But, you know, for me, Nestor, one of the takeaways, and David Zurawick of The Sun, who I think does just a terrific job, really, of chronicling media in the 21st century, I thought he really nailed it in his recent Sun article, where he talked about, you know, he was entering this sort of cynically about, Oprah's going to interview Meghan and Harry, and Oprah's, and he said, all of a sudden, 10 minutes in, he says to himself, you know, I forget how truly gifted Oprah is. And, you know, I did watch it. We did, you know, like millions and millions and millions around the globe. We did watch it. And like Zurawick, that was one of my takeaways. I probably said two or three times during the interview to Linda, my goodness, Oprah is good. You know, and we interview people, you interview people 7 days a week. I interview them three, four, five times a week with you. And I think we're always trying to get better. And it seems to me that what she does so well is she identifies the areas of interest and asks a leading question and then gets out of the way and just lets them become the story and lets the story be told.
Well,
and
one thing I would say about
that
Oprah,
I think I know I have to do
she's
better.
She's interviewing people that are very, very learned generally, right? Like, she's sitting with whomever she's sitting with that we're interested in. It has some intellect about them, you know, in whatever their medium or fashion would be. And they all are communicators to some degree, right? They've all been in the public eye, right? Even Zuckerberg, an obviously weirdly socially awkward, you know, Woody Allen types, right? Like, most of the people that she talks to are ultra celebrities who've been interviewed a billion times. And I always sort of compare it to Cal Ripken here, where Cal's so guarded about most things that now when you talk to Cal, it's refreshing because this, when I sit and talk to Cal now, it wasn't the guy in the locker room, you know, talking to you right now. You would never would have wanted to come on WNST and talk politics with me on Monday morning when you were chief of staff, right?
Well, I might have done it, but I would have chosen my words much more carefully than I choose them now. You know,
but when people sit with Oprah, they're there for a reason too. They're there to see a priest, right? They're there to confess. They're there to tell the rest of the story. They're there to communicate. Once she gets to them, they're ready to tell their story, right? Like, I mean, she may poke and prod, but they're ready to laugh or cry or tell their story. That's not the version of Lamar Jackson I would get if we brought him down the Fadleys and sat down and talked to him, because by nature, everyone we sit with is guarded, sometimes too much so. Well, I tell you all the time, when somebody brings that to me, when I get that version of the public figure, public speaking, Jen Psaki thing, I don't care about it. I stop watching it. It's not interesting to me. The thing about Oprah is everybody in the world knew something was going to be said that wasn't said before, because Oprah works in that way that you come to her to tell her the thing you haven't told anybody else, right?
You know, Nestor, I've kidded with our friend Richard Scher a couple of times over the years. I always say I'm not a real good prognosticator. It's why I don't bet on football games or basketball games. I'm not good at predicting what next, you know, pop culture thing is going to be big. And I can remember, oh man, it has to be, 30, 40 years ago now, when Oprah, and I didn't, you know, I liked Oprah. She was fine. I didn't know Oprah. I don't know Oprah. But when Oprah left Baltimore to go to Chicago to ostensibly challenge Phil Donahue, she was going to take on Phil Donahue and become the next great thing. I can remember saying, what are we talking about? Phil Donahue is larger than life. Phil Donahue is Marlo Thomas, right? Phil Donahue is
that girl.
Phil Donahue and Alan Alda, right? Were the new men of the ages, the sensitive, caring men that everybody, you know, women wanted to be with, and men thought, oh, that would be nice if I could be more like that. How's Oprah going to compete with that? Well, of course, the rest is history. Oprah becomes one of the few people in the United States or in the world that can be identified by her first name.
What's the last thing she did before Sunday night? Like, I can't remember the last time I saw Oprah do something, say something, you know, be a part of my life, right? Like, in that way where she's in front of me. It's interesting how it feels like she's been gone a little while, you know?
Well, I think she spends a lot of her energy overseeing the OWN network, you know, OWN, and trying to make sure that there's quality programming on there. But it is things like Sunday night that keeps her in the public eye and makes her who she is, makes her quote unquote a brand, makes her Oprah. And as I said, what my takeaway is that she really identifies the story, asks a leading question, and then gets out of the way.
So no, you're going to take a royal story and turn it into a good journalism piece. Is that what you're turning this
into? Well, I'm going to say to Oprah, I promise to try to do better at that and let folks tell their story. So, but there were other big stories this week, Nestor. I mean, you know, it's the thing. I mean, Joe Biden promised at the beginning of his presidency, right, that help was on the way. And sure enough, after staying up all night, to early the next day, I guess Friday night into Saturday morning, the Senate, without one Republican vote, passes the American Recovery Act, $1.9 billion, assuming that our friend, the Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, works her magic, as she always does, in the House of Representatives. That bill will pass, or by the time this airs, will have passed. And $1,400 checks and a lot of aid to state and local governments and money for schools and money for frontline healthcare workers.
That money's just going right back into the economy, Don, instantly.
No doubt. No doubt. And it will stimulate the economy. And if you listen to Janet Yellen and others, they're not particularly worried about inflation. Biden will have delivered on a major, major promise. And I think the political question, Nestor, that we all try to ask, that everyone's trying to ask or answer, everyone's trying to answer, is what the Republican endgame is. I know we talk about this a lot, but it seems to me, what do they say that, and you probably have seen it in sports, but they say generals always make a mistake of trying to fight the last war. Well, it seems to me, and we won't know for 2 years and maybe 4 years, but Republicans may be stuck in making that mistake of quote unquote trying to fight their last war. And what I mean by that is back to the very first months, weeks of the Obama administration, when President Obama was elected for the first time, and Mitch McConnell had that now famous meeting in a hotel with a bunch of Republican senators. And he said, "We have one job. I don't care what this guy does. We're against it. So if he says up, we say down. He says white, we say black. You know, he says sunny, we say cloudy. Whatever he brings up, we are against it. And we'll one-term him." Well, it didn't work. I mean, it made for a contentious presidency. It made for a very particularly difficult first year when the president was trying to pass health care. But it seems to me they're going back to that playbook, but one of the players is very different. And obviously a lot of folks are talking about, and we love President Obama, but Joe Biden, in some ways that are, it's a good thing, is not.
Well, Joe's not trying to get elected.
He's not Barack Obama. Right.
No, but and Joe's done. This is it for Joe. Like Joe's got 4 years to do what Joe's going to. Joe's not, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt here. I mean, Joe's not going to be governing at 86. He's going to be hanging out in the beach down in Rehoboth, you know. So there is a part of it where Joe's not real interested in press conferences or showing up many places, although he is coming to Baltimore this week. And we applaud the Johnson & Johnson folks for sticking a needle in my wife's arm and getting her sick on Saturday night so she won't get sick in the future. And but this is not a Twitter presidency. It is everything we said it was going to be. Different, a lot different, and a lot more about like governing and getting stuff done, which is, hey, you want to win an election, what's now 18 months from now, right? I mean, year and a half from now, you want to win the middle round? Govern well. Fix people. Get people out. If I'm out on the lawn at Merriweather drinking beer this summer at a Hootie and the Blowfish concert, there will be Republicans on the lawn that will be happy to be there. And when it comes time to vote, they're going to be voting how they're doing, right? You know, I still believe that. I believe elections are going to be won. Not in these gerrymandered, freakish places in the South where, you know, that not there, here. I'm talking about District 1. Well, I'm talking about the governorship of Maryland. And to me, it's not even Republican or Democrat, because I think Michael Steele's going to run, that it's about, like, who's going to govern? Not throw mud, not take guns into the Senate, not show themselves on Twitter to be a jerk. It's going to be about getting things done and helping people. Well, you, make your city better, and I'll vote for you, Brandon Scott. You know.
Well, you touched on a number of key points there, Nestor. Things that I think are really coming into focus. Number one, when we talk about Biden and Obama and why this playbook of the Republicans may not work, let's never forget it's the United States of America, and Joe Biden is not black. So, for a large percentage of people across the United States of America, having an African-American president simply did not compute, a.k.a. Donald Trump or the former guy. What was I doing? I'm not supposed to refer. The former guy dreaming up the birther thing and that whole, you know, awful, horrific part of American history. So, first of all, Joe Biden is not African-American, so they don't have that going for them. The other thing is, as hard as they try, as you said, Joe Biden is not scary. You know, Joe Biden, you can picture Joe Biden walking on the Rehoboth boardwalk, you know, with Fisher's popcorn in one hand and Dumpster's chicken in the other, right? I mean, he's just not a scary guy. So this
the ideology of they're coming to get my guns, you know, like that's a whole different ideology than he's going to tax me too much. Those are different people.
Well, it's funny, Nestor, that you say that because there are some articles now being written. I read one just the other day that are equating what's happening in the Republican Party to what happened to Democrats during the Reagan era. And your dad may well have ended up – what year did your dad die, Nestor?
My dad died in 92.
92. Okay, so he did go through – Ronald Reagan. Did your dad, he was a lifelong Democrat. Did your dad look kindly on Ronald Reagan?
My dad didn't hate Reagan. My dad hated Nixon, you know, because of corruption. My dad hated crooked. No one thought Ronald Reagan was crooked, right?
So all of these Democrats, these lifelong Dems like your dad who had picked up the lunch pail and put on the hard hat, and headed to the point for many, many years and worked the coal mines.
Nobody thought Reagan was un-American. You know what I mean? There were no Democrats that thought he's with Russia. You know what I mean? Like, one of the reasons the Democrats liked him is he wasn't with Russia.
Well, they certainly did that. They saw him strong
Mr.
on
Gorbachev.
That. And they thought that the Democrats, they thought that the Democrats, starting really, I'll say, in the 1972 election with George McGovern. And again, I was a young college kid, a McGovernite, who was convinced until the night before that somehow George McGovern, show you how delusional I was going to pull an upset. And of course, he won.
I won't get you started on Mondale.
He won one state. But these traditional Democrats felt that their party had drifted too far to the left and was no longer talking about meat and potato issues that they cared about. And they said, hey, this guy Reagan, even though he's a Republican, he appears to get us. Thus coined the term Reagan Democrats that really became factors in the election, certainly key parts of helping elect both Bushes. Reagan Democrats actually returned to Bill Clinton.
Well, look, I was in Dundalk in 1980, right? That was oil prices. That was gas prices. That was Jimmy Carter. That was hostages in Iran that were part of the whole, you know, release the minute Ronald Reagan ran the country. I mean, I was 11 years old. What did I know about it, you know? But I often think my childhood, I was shielded from how tumultuous Kennedy getting shot in the head, a couple of years later, Nixon running around, Vietnam, Watergate, I grew up in Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford and Saturday Night Live in the late 70s and disco. And now here comes Ronald Reagan and the big bad USSR, and we beat him in hockey, so he must be awesome. And then there's Reagan. My parents didn't have time to explain all that to me. My dad explained Herbert Hoover to me. And, you know, I read about Hitler, right? And you at Social Studies, Mr. Thomas, taught me about Hitler at Dundalk High School. But, you know, that was a messy time. And it's taken me a lifetime to understand McGovern and Nixon and Agnew and Dale Anderson and Baltimore County and being educated by people like you and Ted Venatola's
question. So the connection is, so you take this Reagan-esque Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall guy who got Democrats to vote Republican. What's being suggested now is that there actually may end up being coined a term Biden Republicans who suddenly begin to vote Democratic and eschew their Republican
leanings. Well, there is no Republican Party, right? There's Trump. Right. That's what it is.
That becomes to me, Nestor, the dilemma. And it's a challenge. We've talked about it before. It's a challenge for Democrats and Republicans. These so-called Biden Republicans are, of course, these folks who live, the soccer moms, the folks in the suburbs of Atlanta and Philadelphia and Detroit that typically have trended Republican who have looked at the Republican Party, particularly on steroids, over the as fostered by the former guy, and now on full-blown steroids by the Marjorie Taylor Greens and Nepal Gosar, who recently spoke at a white nationalist rally, proudly spoke at it just a couple of weeks ago. And they're going, whoa, 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 that's a little too crazy for me. And this guy, Uncle Joe Biden, he's not nearly that scary. That
The joke on the Republicans is if they would have passed the $1,400 back in August, we'd be living in Trumplandia.
Well, it is yes, there is no doubt about it, and there. Listen, let's rewind this show, right? We're about 1 year, a little more than 1 year into the pandemic. We're coming up on St. Patrick's Day. I point out to my friends and to my family all of the time. I mean, in a sad way, I mean, it's really, I'm conflicted over this, because had Donald Trump way back in January of 2020 come out to the podium and said, we've got a crisis that we've never faced in the United States of America. It's time for all of us to come together. It's time for all of us to follow the science. I'm going to turn basically.
Oh, come on, you're entire, in a dream now talking.
Well, no, let me finish my thought, though. Yeah, I am. Let me tell you what happened, though. But it goes to your point, Nestor. Had he, which tells you how I think, how really, really ill he is, had he been able to do that, for even a Machiavellian reason, to say to people, you know, I don't believe any of this crap, but I'm going to say it. And man, I'm going to win going away. He wasn't even able to step out of his own skin and do that, with the reality that had he done that, Nestor, you are absolutely correct. We would be now suffering through Trump 2. But because he couldn't, 500,000 people died. But also because he couldn't, we were able to get President Biden. But I always remind folks, we only got President Biden by a combined roughly 70,000 votes. And because a few secretaries of state and local judges actually had some respect for the law and what have you. And I know we're coming up on the clock. I know you've got some other things to do after this week's recon. Next week when we come back, we're going to do a deep dive into the filibuster. I get questions a lot about filibuster, and we want to talk more about H.R. 1 and our friend Congressman John Sarbanes. We're so proud of what he's done. So there's a lot going on, and who knows what will have happened with the royal family by then.
So what we're saying is next week you're going to be a social studies teacher here. We're going to do a class on filibusters.
We're going to do a little bit on the history of the filibuster, a little bit about I had to beat up some of my cousins on social media this week who were screaming about gerrymandering and why Maryland wouldn't fix gerrymandering. And I said, come on, guys, understand Democrats are all in for fixing gerrymandering, but on a federal level. You can't disarm yourself one by one when the other guy's not going to disarm himself.
So we got filibuster gerrymandering. Like when you start to see laws that are being enacted to stop voting, it really does become, and what we're seeing with the Senate now, with no one voting for anything that's even thought to be brought up by maybe on the left side. I mean, it's a mess. But
we'll do voter suppression next week as well. Hey, and a tease, Nestor.
Well, one leads to the other, right?
I mean, one leads to the other. We're back to. We certainly are back to Jim Crow and a little tease. We got great guests. We've been having phenomenal guests on Baltimore Positive. And just recently, Justin Fenton has confirmed that he's going to sit down and join us and talk about his book.
We Own This City. I am so looking forward to talking to him.
Oh, well, you and I have been on, you know, we did it with Jane Miller. We did it with Brandon Soderbergh and the guys that wrote a detailed book on, the Gun Trace Task Force, and now Justin Fenton, whose book will become actually a series with your buddy David Simon. So we've got all kinds of good things coming up. And maybe by then we'll know who's going to be starting for the Orioles in the starting rotation. So good stuff on the recon, Nestor Aparicio.
Yeah, I'll be here waiting for my first Oriole game on Masson. Maybe we'll have that by next Monday as well. How about that?
We can hope.
Well, we can dream. Don Mullins, former Baltimore County executive, my sometimes co-host around here at WNST for all things Baltimore positive, working on a new studio, new vibe, new haircut, same crab cakes with our friends over at Fadley's in Lexington Market. They're coming to Catonsville. We're going to be eating more crab cakes this year. So, hey, maybe I should write that down. Eat more crab cakes. Yeah, eat more crab cakes. Has that one been taken yet? Eat more crab cakes. Okay, got to write that one down. Also, our friends who served crab cakes last week, State Fair and El Guapo as well. State Fair was working the old Portales lamb shanks the other night. I missed out on that because I had a refrigerator full of stuff from Philadelphia. But I'm going to make that right this week by getting back over to the 21228 and seeing our friends at El Guapo and State Fair. All of our WNST sponsors, including our new sponsorship with Wise Markets. They're wise conversations. And we've been wise shoppers a long time, if you know us and my pal Rob Santoni. So big local shout out to him as well. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive. And I'll bring the logo back next week.